right, everybody, welcome to a special edition of Saints Happy Hour Podcast. It's another free edition on a Friday. We gave you Catherine Terrell free. We're giving you this one free, but you really should donate and become a patron so you can get all our cool stuff. Andrew, we are joined again by Saints diehard superfan, the number 62 tennis player in the world, Ryan Harrison. Ryan, thanks for giving us time today.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Happy to be back on the show.
Andrew, he was going to talk about why Dez Bryant and all his craziness was going to be a perfect, a great fit for the Saints, and culture was not going to matter. But we had some horrible news today. Tell the people what happened. I'm sure they're up on it. But
yeah. So, well, breaking news: Dez Bryant, and in fact, I wasn't paying close attention to Twitter, and I didn't even realize this until Ryan texted me. But Dez Bryant looks like he's out for the year, most likely. Last play at practice. Looks like he tore his Achilles tendon. Obviously, that's huge for not really this week so much. I mean, the Saints went 7-1 without him, but more just the outlook of what's to come. And obviously, with Cam Meredith being sidelined for the year, back to the drawing board in terms of what the Saints do to fill in his shoes. And so now there's talk of Brandon Marshall. But, you know, I talked to Ryan some about this, and I thought I asked him to come on the show because I thought he had a really insightful and on point perspective on Dez Bryant, even though he can be crazy and he can be a little of a question mark in terms of adding him to a locker room. I think, you know, a lot of these points still apply if the Saints go ahead and sign Brandon Marshall. So Ryan, if you could, would you kind of explain to Saints fans your perspective on bringing a guy of that stature on a one-year deal that has a lot of notoriety and what that means for the Saints locker room?
Yeah, of course. You know, my take on it is that when you have great leadership and a great foundation as an organization, you want a guy who's that competitive. There is no guys in any sports that have ever been successful that don't have this inward inner confidence in themselves. And some guys with bigger personalities and more fiery guys, they are more outspoken about the negative sides when they don't feel like they're getting the ball or when they don't feel like they're being in a position to succeed. And with Dez Bryant in particular, we've seen what's going on in Dallas now that he's gone. It's not been good. So I feel like a lot of his maybe voices for concern were valid after seeing how it's gone since then. I think that now as a Saints fan, when you're looking at a guy like that, you go, we have a great quarterback, one of the greatest of all time. We have a legendary coach. We have a great foundation from an organization, and there's weapons all around the offense. And when you're Dez Bryant and you're coming into this situation, you're just in the perfect spot to succeed because you spent your whole career with one playoff win being a dominant force in the NFL. You've walked into a contending team, and you've done it in a situation where you've gone on and you're playing with the greatest quarterback, in my opinion, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So this is for him. If you come into that situation and you mess that up, well, nobody's going to really have any more question marks on your character. You just have a bad character at that point. But in my opinion, he doesn't. In my opinion, he's a great guy who has a fiery temper and a fiery passion for the game, and at times has let it get the best of him and shown passion on the sideline, but only when the team was not doing well. Now, to get yourself in a position to succeed, you have to be able to look at what you can bring to a team, right? A guy like Brandon Marshall, they're going to be coming in and they're going to be told straight up, just like Dez probably was. I wasn't there, so I can't say for certain, but I'd bet a lot of money on it, that these guys are very understanding of their role, very understanding of their role behind Michael Thomas, behind Alvin Kamara, and all these weapons that we have in the offense. When you have that foundation that we have, you've seen the Patriots do this for years, where they brought in guys like Josh Gordon, like Randy Moss when he had a down year in Minnesota and then came over and was dominant with Tom Brady. Even a guy, you know, very sad story, but Aaron Hernandez, who obviously had character issues and was very successful there for a long time. When you have a foundation like organizations like the Saints and the Patriots have, as a player, you can't want more than to be in a position like that. So that's my take on it and why I thought it would have been a great fit.
Yeah, and also, too, here's the thing. You look at teams that have had issues in locker rooms, and not just from wide receivers or skill guys, right? Like Miami with Richie Incognito, where he was taking the offensive line to strip clubs and he was bullying another guy. Like, the Saints are not going to let that happen. Part of it's Sean Payton, but part of it's Drew Brees. Like, Drew Brees is not going to let Dez Bryant come in here and bitch and complain and foul up his offense. Like, it's just not going to happen, right? So either you get in line or you get out. And I think the Saints have a foundation with Sean Payton, but also it's just the players. Like, they're just not going to – the Saints have leaders on their team that just aren't going to put up with nonsense. And when it happens with other teams, guys, I feel like – Andrew and Ryan, it happens because there's like a void of leadership and there's no real player leaders on the team. So then the knuckleheads and the malcontents, they fill that vacuum for leadership.
For sure. And the complaints come not just whenever you're not getting the ball, but they also come when the team's not successful, right? It's really hard if you're Dez Bryant to come into this situation, have three catches for 33 yards, but the Saints scored 38 points and be like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Yeah. Obviously, the offense is clicking. So in this position, I actually loved it. I thought that Dez, and it's terrible news today, but I thought he was betting on himself. I thought that he was looking at the Saints as a future organization that could potentially want to re-sign him in a situation where they didn't have a clear number two and a guy to compliment Michael Thomas. And I think that in a position that he was in, he was ready to come in and prove that his value was the same, if not more, than it was in recent years with an all-time great quarterback. And even being the number two on the team, he was willing to bet that with the targets he got, the red zone looks he got, he was going to show that he was a dominant force. And I think that we have that ability right now. I think that we can bring in guys who maybe not – I mean, maybe not Brandon Marshall. It might be Brandon Marshall. I've heard it would be, but we'll see how that plays out. But you can bring in guys – who are of that sort of nature or that sort of, I guess, ego or attitude. And you can put those guys in the Saints and say, listen, you want a shot. You want a shot one more time to show people that you got. You're not getting a better opportunity than this. And so if I'm a Brandon Marshall or a Dez Bryant, well, you're getting your shot. So you can't mess that up.
Hey, Ryan, I'm reading a tweet right now, and I want to share this with you and get your perspective on it. It's from Adam Schefter, and he says he texted with an NFL coach, and the NFL coach texted to him back, if that's the case, I'm not shocked. He's been out that long. Does not matter what you do while away from real football. You can't duplicate it. So you're a professional athlete, you know, and I think some football fans may not appreciate, some people that listen to this podcast may not appreciate how physical pro tennis is, but you know, I would say the demands on your body I would put them up almost against any sport that's non-contact. Certainly football, the physicality is on a different level. But at the same time, being a professional athlete, I mean, you've had times, whether it be due to injury or off season or whatever, where you've been away from the sport for a while and then you come back, your first tournament back or whatever, you're trying to reinsert yourself into playing that way again. I'm curious if you can kind of tell us, as a professional athlete, does it surprise you that a guy would get injured after being away from football for this long? And is it hard to kind of keep yourself physically primed if you're not going through those repetitions in real time, in real matches, in real getting real hits and getting real reps?
For sure. Great question, because, you know, for a lot of you guys who have played sports in college or who have played, you know, at competitive any point in time, really, it doesn't matter if it was high school or fun and pickup games or whatever it is. Everyone knows that soreness that you get when you haven't done something in a while. And that's when your muscles are the most susceptible and your ligaments are the most susceptible to be torn. Whenever you're not in that durable, we've been taking a consistent amount of treatment, a consistent amount of work that shows that we're ready for whatever, you know, entails in a practice. And, you know, this is a best guess scenario because nobody can truly know what Dez was doing in the off season, right? Or in his time off, really. But the fact that he showed up a couple pounds overweight leads you to think that he wasn't quite in as good a condition as they wanted him to be in. So at this point, we're just speculating. It could be bad luck, but in my opinion, there's a very high likelihood that Dez was a little bit out of shape, but still a very gifted and talented guy and excited. He's probably coming into practice the last 2 days just, you know, with a fire under his butt, ready to show what he's got to do. And looking to try to play Sunday, right? I mean, that's been the last question for the last 48 hours is, was he going to play Sunday? And in my opinion, you got a guy who's probably trying to prove he's ready to go because he's itching to get back on the field, especially in this situation. And I would guess that he probably did a little bit too much, a little bit too soon. I'm currently in my off season for tennis right now. I haven't hit a ball in a couple of weeks. If I go out there and if I try to make the Australian Open in 3 days, well, I'm going to put myself in a very high risk situation. So I think that, you know, maybe it could have been a situation where I won't fault anybody other than just bad luck, but he's probably trying to prove himself. The Saints are probably excited to get him there. And with Cameron Meredith going on IR, it's probably a situation where they needed him to be ready as soon as possible.
Yeah. And the thing is, elite athletes, like, it's hard to not push yourself, right? Especially like you said, Dez, he's probably super excited. He's waited for the perfect opportunity. He didn't sign with just any team. He's found it with, you know, and he's probably like jazzed and pumped to be at practice because he hadn't practiced with a team all year, right? He's probably excited to be out there. And, you know, I mean, bad luck or whatever. It's just it's hard for an athlete when they're not excited to say, hey, no, just dial it back, Dez, on a Friday. But, you know, it happens.
Yeah. For sure. Well, and, go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
Well, I was going to change subjects. I was going to pivot here and ask you something different, Ryan. So if you have another –
when all these great athletes we're talking about, whether it's Michael Thomas, Drew Brees, Dez Bryant, whoever it is, there's just this competitiveness, whether or not you're playing football or whether or not you're at home. So – it is hard to dial that back whenever you're in a situation. If I go play pickup basketball with my friends, it's hard to dial it back. You know, it's something that's kind of in you that's really it's tough to turn off, really.
Yeah. And when you're 38 years old and that's still the case, I speaking from experience, it only gets worse. So, hey, Ryan. So I know you were you were on the Saints sidelines last weekend, and you got to experience up close and personal the Rams victory, which was an incredible game, and you picked the right one to go to. Curious if you have anything to share about the experience and if you were able to kind of take a sneak peek at anything on the sidelines that was interesting that you would want to share.
Yeah, I mean, that was an incredible experience. I hadn't been back to the Superdome in a long time, and I was really really excited to be able to make it work in a game that was of that magnitude. Incredible experience overall, but the Dome, I mean, for those of you who haven't been there, it is an incredible experience. I mean, from a fan, first of all, whenever you're there and everybody's bleeding the Saints just like you are, and you get to experience that, especially while we're lucky enough to have the sort of legend in Drew Brees and our team on down from there, that we have them still going for us and playing well. And then from there, you see how big of a home field advantage that we have because of the passion that everybody has. I mean, everyone talks about the Dome. I mean, they talk about this is our house. This is a huge advantage. I mean, you hear the way that the Saints fans are on third down in the first quarter. It's the same way as a 2-minute drive trying to win the game. I mean, everybody is rowdy. Everybody knows football, and they're all trying to do their part and have an impact. And, you know, incredible vibe in that stadium, and I just look forward to us having home field, because after it experiences it, we're going to be a tough team to beat there.
Yeah, that's good because, you know, I've been to the Carolina Panthers Stadium. I've been to the Redskins Stadium. I've been to a few NFL stadiums other than New Orleans. We just had a podcast with a beat reporter for the Bengals who at 5-3 just told us that
open revolt.
They had 40,000 fans. Yeah, 40,000 fans in their stadium for their last game at 5-3. So, you know, I just think as New Orleans Saints fans, that's all we know. We don't maybe have an appreciation for what other stadiums are like. And you hear the Falcons and the Cowboys complain about how their stadiums are so electric and there's so much going on and they're so fun that a lot of times these teams complain that at halftime, it takes a while for the fans to get back to their seats because they want to go around the concourse and see things.
You know, New Orleans is one of the last stadiums that, they did a bunch of great renovations post Katrina, and they got the FEMA money, and it's a modern stadium, it's a good stadium. But New Orleans is one of the last stadiums that doesn't have seat license and doesn't have a ton of corporate tickets. And yes, the ticket prices are high, and they're starting to price out some people. But the Saints fan base is still rowdy, middle-class, regular fans, and they don't have many places like that in the NFL left. Like you said, in Atlanta, it's corporate, it's boxes, it's seat licenses. The Saints Superdome still kind of has that college rowdy, it might get crazy up in here vibe that I don't think too many NFL stadiums have left. You know, I think I can count the other ones probably on one hand that are just as rowdy as the Dome.
For sure. And seeing it up close, you can tell that because the day before I was at the Saints game, I was at the LSU game, and the like you said, that sort of passion. It's hard to recreate that college football passion because everyone who is an alumni, they truly feel like they're part of the team because they went to the school. And that's the thing that Saints fans have that's the most noticeable, is that it feels like everybody – it's not fair weather. Everybody bleeds it like on Sunday the way that you would if you were an alumni at a school. And that's
part of the culture.
Yeah, that's what makes it special.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, thanks for doing this, man. Real quick, so you're 62 in the world. I don't know how many people listening to this know this, but you won the French Open in doubles, which was one of the biggest titles of your career. You won your first ATP title in Memphis last year. You made a couple finals this year. So you're 62 in the world. Real quick, for the tennis fans out there, assess where you're at right now and kind of your goals moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really strong year. I was kind of on the way to accomplishing what I'd set out for this year, which I wanted to be in the top 30. I came into the U.S. Open ranked 40 and 42 or so. And then, unfortunately, I sprained a vertebrae in my back right after the U.S. Open. So I didn't get to play much at all after the Open. I tried to play one event. But with the way that our system works, that means that I have a lot of opportunity to move up next year. The next step for me is to try and start turning the tide in some of these matches where I've played very close and competitive matches against top players. But, it's at that point where I've felt the finish line and I've felt myself right there. And so next year, I'm just looking forward to the opportunity to get through that. And then from there, confidence builds. It's like anything. Once you accomplish something, you can get it done, and then you're able to recreate it.
Ryan, thanks for joining us. We will have you back on for the Saints playoff when they're deep in the playoffs, and you, my friend, are deep in the Australian Open. How about it?
I like it. Let's do it, guys.
All right, thanks, Ryan.
Have a good one.